Awesome. All right. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to Recovery Jam. My name is Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. And since there were so many new people, Jenna and I sort of have this like little sort of side decision that we've made, right? She'll discuss the broken bridge when it's her turn if there's a certain number, if there's five or more new people, and I'll share my pictures because, you know, I think it's, I like to share my pictures if you're new. If you've seen them 100 times, you can kind of take a nap and come back in a minute. But I like to share them because they're a visual representation of what it looks like to have an experience with the miraculous. That's the only way that that I can sort of discuss what these pictures are, because this really, you know, this was done to me, not by me. So I like to share them. This was me over 20 years ago when I had first given birth to my daughter. I had been overweight all my life, you know, up and down and up and down, but I thought I would certainly lose this weight when I had my brand new baby because we were so happy. How could I possibly be fat, right? Why would I be fat when I'm so happy? But clearly, you know, in the pink, my daughter got older. We were still, you know, happy in our marriage, and I got fatter. So happiness and a beautiful baby didn't get me well. It continued this way. You know, we were often at a table eating and drinking and eating and drinking. And weight was always the problem. Weight was always, I always thought that was the problem. Food and weight. It was the big hot topic. And this was me throughout the years. You know, in the red here, I was having a party in my house. I didn't look like I was having a party. I could barely brush my hair. I could barely brush my teeth. Hygiene was becoming difficult. My house was a mess. I'd like to say that I've been relieved of a messy house. I haven't been relieved of a messy house, but it's not as bad as it was. Everything got easier, you know, being recovered. Everything got easier. This was me on vacation. I was really happy. I think I was a couple of days away from a relapse. I picked something up on that super happy vacation, and I wasn't smiling like this at the end. I wasn't. And in the leopard sweater, this was where I was really at the worst, the worst point in my life. I was over 300 pounds. My son now is 14 and a half. And so he was under a year there. He was extremely active. And I could not hold him. I could barely hold him because the size of my body made it so difficult to hold this kid. And he was really wiggly and wormy, and he was always all over the place. And I couldn't keep up with him either. And I would cry because I wanted him more than anything. And I knew I wasn't appreciating this incredible gift of this beautiful baby, because I couldn't hold him and I couldn't chase him. And that was a tough spot to be in. And the only solution for me in that intolerable situation was to keep on eating. And that's what I did. You know, that's what I did. In the picture of me in the blazer here, my kids are, you know, gotten a little older. I had already come into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous yet again, and I was getting well. I was getting well here. You could see there was a difference. When you have a lot of weight to lose, it takes a long time for your body to catch up, especially because part of my addiction was to diets. And part of my solution, I do not diet. I am not on a diet. So it took a while for my body to catch up. This was me and my sisters and my sister-in-laws. I had to eat and drink a lot to get through these family occasions because I showed up in all of them with all the things that they'd ever done wrong to me, like right here in my pocket. You know, it was like a list ready to go, and it went back to when I was 3. And a lot of it, you know, they say real or imagined. A lot of it was imagined. A lot of it was imagined. It was my perception. These people love me. I have a loving family. Flawed, yep, imperfect, loud, overbearing, opinionated, just like me, just like me. And none of these people ever meant to do me harm, you know, but I ate and drank my way through a lot of these occasions. And I felt separate and apart and not connected to the people who love me. And oh, these are two pictures of me and my mom. The one in the gray dress, I'm recovered. My body hadn't caught up yet, but I love this picture because I remember this occasion very well. It was my daughter's bas mitzvah. We threw a very big, elaborate affair. I paid a fortune for it. And I ate my same small little plate of salmon, I think broccoli, and a salad. Pretty much what I eat all the time. It didn't matter that I was paying for it. There was a room for dessert at this affair. Can you imagine a room for dessert and none of it called my name, none of it interested me, and I felt so connected to everybody in the room. All the resentments were gone. I showed up loving and happy, and I knew that I wasn't at the right size of my body, but I felt light. I felt small and thin and light. And the picture on the left is a more recent picture of my mom and myself, and we both got older. But I'm in a normal size body, and I'm able to love and be loved and feel the love and support of my family. And these are pictures of me, in the last number of years. I love to show these because this is what I look like. Every one of those dresses fits me. I always say this. Every one of those dresses fits me, and I know that without even worrying about it, I just go in the closet and pull it out. And that was never my experience before. And to prove it, this was in the beginning of the month. I went to my nephew's wedding, and I thought I was going to wear a certain dress, but it was too chilly that day to wear it. And I went in the closet, and wouldn't you know, this dress is there and it fits, and it's a number of years old, and I wore it. And it felt great, right? I didn't have to buy a new dress. And there I am with my family. I didn't feel separate. I didn't feel alone. I didn't need to eat and drink my way through it. 99% of the resentments are gone. Here's me and my small, my immediate family, my children, my husband, and myself. And I wanted to show these side by side. These are pictures of my husband and myself. We got older, but I got healthier. I got healthier and I got recovered. Okay. So what's the purpose? Why would I bother showing that to you? I generally find when I show those pictures, here's what happens. People lean in a little closer. They lean in a little. They think, oh, there's something here I want to hear. And it's not, I didn't, by the way, it's not my program. I didn't create this. There is no jam program, also, by the way. There's no jam program. There's Overeaters Anonymous. There's the program as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I also love the AA 12 and 12. So now I'm going to get to the topic. Look at that, like 20 minutes in, and I'm just getting started. We're going to talk about step 11. And if I don't finish it in the AA 12 and 12, I got the authority, I got the liberty, I can stop it, and then I can pick it up the next time that I come on. So step 11, and if you have the AA 12 and 12, you can take it out. It says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. And on page 96, it says that we AAs or we OAs are active folk, enjoying the satisfactions of dealing with the realities of life, usually for the first time in our lives, and strenuously trying to help the next alcoholic or compulsive overeater who comes along. So it isn't surprising that we often tend to slight serious meditation and prayer as something not really necessary, right? So why? What are the obstacles? What's getting in the way of us being really serious about our step 11 practices? Well, here's the list, right? Why do we shortchange this? One, we start enjoying the busy lives that recovery gives us. We get these great new lives and then we become too busy, right? Number two, we're too busy helping others, right? We're not just enjoying our own lives, but we're like doing this work of helping others. Three, we think it's something that's not really necessary. People have that misconception. It's not that necessary. Four, we feel it is something that might help us meet an occasional emergency. So we see it as something that we'll use as needed, right? It's just an as needed, apply when needed. Five, we think it's too mysterious. It's like, I don't get it. It's too like esoteric. It's too way out there. Six, perhaps we don't even believe in it, right? Or seven, we're still clinging to the AA group as our higher power. Or I would substitute a meeting as our higher power, or our sponsor as our higher power, or our food plan as our higher power. And when we're still clinging to those powers that are not a higher power, we think, yeah, what am I praying to? Why would I pray? Why would I meditate? Okay, page 97. We liked AA all right, and we're quick to say that it had done miracles, right? I showed you pictures of miracles there, but we recoiled from meditation and prayer as obstinately as the scientist who refused to perform a certain experiment lest it proves his pet theory wrong. Of course, we finally did experiment, and when we did, unexpected results followed. We felt different. In fact, we knew different, and so we were sold on meditation and prayer. You know, and then a little further down, it says, almost the only scoffers at prayer are those who never tried it enough. And I have to tell you, this is true. I have yet to see from all of the people that I've worked with, those that have worked with me, those whose recovery has been consistent through decades, we meet them. Every one of those people who have the kind of stellar recovery that I aspire to have will all say they pray and meditate. All of them, right? The people whose recovery we find valuable have a prayer practice. They have a meditation practice. And I've also found that people who come in, myself included, who think this is kind of silly, we do it, and holy smokes, we get results. We feel something. I've seen it happen with new people that I've worked with. They whisper in the beginning, I don't believe this. I don't think it's going to work. And I just keep saying, you got to do it. Just keep trying it. Keep trying it. And they start feeling the results. So it's the evidence, right? We feel it. Page 97 says, those of us who have come to make regular use of prayer would no more do without it than we would refuse air, food, or sunshine. And for the same reason, right? When we refuse air, light, or food, the body suffers. And when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our minds, our emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. So if we think back, right, to our reasons for being here, like why am I here in Overeaters Anonymous? Because I've warped my mind. My mind is warped. I'm overly emotional. And, you know, and if I'm not overly emotional, I'm constantly being governed by my feelings. And I have no intuition that's of use to me, right? My intuitive thoughts before Overeaters Anonymous, my instinctive actions was hand to mouth, right? Every time life got rough, that's what I did. Even before I knew that that's what I was doing, it was instinctive. It was intuitive. That's what my intuitive thought was. And so I come here because I need a vital intuition. I need an intuition that's going to give me life. You know, so now we're going to be told what the benefits are on page 98, the light of God's reality, which is his strength and his grace. That's what we get. We get huge benefits. We get God's strength and we get grace. We get God's grace from prayer and meditation. So there's three parts to step 11. One, self-examination, right? Which is self-reflection and daily inventory, which I would say, like, you know, it's like the fifth step, right? When we took our fifth step, it's done with first ourselves, admission to ourselves, to God, and another human being. And so it's described here on this page, you know, this idea, why do we need another human being, even in our nightly reviews? Because we need the development of the kind of humility that makes it possible to receive God's help. I can't get God's help if I don't have humility. And one of the surefire ways for me to have humility is to allow other people to see my imperfections. Nothing does it quite as effective as bringing it before God and before another man. I can't have this illusion that I am any better than I really am. And I find it's a really an important part of my practice that I share my nightly review with people. I need other people to bear witness, you know, to my sincere desire to do better and my huge imperfections, you know, and not in a way that's like I'm such a lousy human being, but more in a way that I am a human being, right? I am just a human being. And I love the description of what true humility is. It's given in step five. It's an honest, like, view of who we and what we are, and a sincere desire to be better, right? And that's what this is about. So step 11 has three parts: self-examination, two, meditation, and three, prayer. And it goes on to say, this is on page, I think 98, that there's a direct linkage among these three things through self-examination, meditation, and prayer. That if we do them separately, it can bring us a lot of relief and great benefit, but when they're logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. I just love that. That's a beautiful promise there, that we have an unshakable foundation. So I would say if we have a strong daily inventory practice and we follow it up with meditation and prayer, then no matter what happens around me, right, all the craziness, I'm unshakable. We have this unshakable foundation. And I think that's how it is that people remain abstinent and recovered, regardless of life's ups and downs, right? People experience all the trials and tribulations and hardships of being a human being, and they don't pick up. And this is how it is, because we have an unshakable foundation. And I have to say, you know, I've had some experiences, some real hard experiences, just like a lot of people. And my prayer practice and my meditation practice and my nightly review, my daily inventory has saved me. You know, I have had an experience of driving my daughter, you know, to the hospital twice, actually. And I have a prayer and meditation practice. Neither of those days, they were really rough days. I didn't pick up the food. And not only did I not pick up the food, but I felt God's support for me in times when it was frightening, you know, and I didn't know the outcome. And it wasn't the way I wanted it. It was not presenting itself according to the plans of me. But I have an unshakable foundation, and I can only say, you know, that the reason I was able to put my food on a scale that day and weigh and measure it and pack it in my cooler was not because I've got a squeaky clean perfect food plan. It was because the prayer and practice and meditation that came before allowed me to take the information and apply it. Right? I've always known what it means to be abstinent, but without prayer and meditation, I can't do it. That's the thing. I can't do it. So page 98 now asks, I say, like, the million-dollar question. How then shall we meditate? Right? You told me it's really important. It's my unshakable foundation. How do I do it? What do I do? And, you know, and I love it. It's give it this chapter gives really useful, like usable direction. It says here the world's libraries and places of worship are treasure troves for all seekers. You can return to your own religious connections. If you're less fortunate, we're given a very good prayer. So I love this. It's like, yeah, you can go to Barnes and Noble, you can go to your library, right? You can research the internet wherever you want to seek information to find out ways to meditate. You're kind of given this direction, like, yeah, go for it. And don't forget about your religious practices. They actually encourage you, if you've grown up with a faith, check it out. Look at it, right? Don't negate it. It might not have worked for you before when you were eating, but now that you're not, you might feel its effects even greater. And now we're given the St. Francis prayer. And I love it. I love how it breaks it down. And I'm going to read the prayer and then I'm going to kind of go through what it says to do. So on page 99, it says, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace. Where there is hatred, may I bring love. That where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there is discord, I may bring harmony. That where there is error, I may bring truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. And that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather than to comfort rather than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, and it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. So, and then we're given directions for how to use this prayer, right? One, read it slowly and savor every word, right? Take in the deep meaning of each phrase and idea. Drop all resistance. For in meditation, I love this, debate has no place, right? Fighting, debating, arguing. In meditation, it's out of there, no place. And two, relax and breathe as though you're laying on the beach in the sun. Use your imagination, it says, to visualize the oceans, the horizons. You can do the mountains, a meadow. For myself, and I'll tell you, I have a practice of visualization. I do. I have a beautiful spot that I hike with my son and I. We love this one spot near us. And that's my go-to place when I do my prayer and meditation in the morning. I picture it. It's a beautiful meadow. I picture the pathway that I walk up, and there's a gorgeous, like, it's underneath a trestle, a beautiful trestle. It's the Mudna Viaduct. It's a beautiful location. You could like Google it. It's gorgeous, the Mudna Viaduct. And I come up under it and I can visualize it because I've been there, and there's a beautiful field to the left of me. And in my meditation, I picture myself. In my meditation, I take off my shoes. I don't do this in real life because I'm not getting ticks. And I walk across the field and I can visualize the grass on my legs. I can visualize that there's a clearing in this meadow. And I picture myself laying down on like freshly mowed, beautiful green, cool grass. And I can feel the sun on my face. And I'm encouraged to do this, right? To use my imagination. We're told, by the way, that we're supposed to use our imagination. And we're actually told here, what do you do if you start thinking this is nonsense, right? Like, because there's a part of our mind that wants to snap this off and say, this is silly. This is nonsense. And we're told if you start thinking this is nonsense, remember our powers of imagination and how we once used to use it to create the wrong kinds of realities. Right? And I have an imagination that makes me either the victim of every circumstance, right? Like I would walk into all those family occasions. I used my imagination to recreate myself back when I was three, right? As a woman of 53, I can use my imagination like that, or I can use my imagination like this, right? So, page 100 says, perhaps our trouble was not that we used our imagination. Perhaps our real trouble was our almost total inability to point imagination towards the right objectives. There's nothing the matter with constructive imagination. All sound achievements rest upon it. After all, no man can build a house until he first envisions a plan for it. Meditation is like that too. It helps to envision our spiritual objective before we try to move towards it. So I know I'm not building a house, right? But I'm building my life. That's what I'm going to use my imagination for. I'm having my Dean moment. My dog is barking. My dog is Dean right now. Sorry. My meditation helps me know what God's plan is for me. And and then we're redirected, right? If I'm having a hard time with my imagination, I'm redirected to put my mind back on that beach or mountains, right? I put it back on the beach or mountains, and now I'm going to look back at the prayer. Read it again. And I think about its essence. First of all, he wanted to become a channel, right? That's the prayer, to become a channel. And then he asked for the grace to bring love, forgiveness, harmony, truth, faith, hope, light, and joy to every human being he could. So I looked up a channel, right? What is a channel? I mean, it's got lots of definitions. Here it's a band of frequencies used in radio and television transmission, right? Especially as used by a particular station. And I want to say it's like the station GOD, right? That's the radio station I'm tuning into. Or it's a medium for communication or the passage of information, right? So it's whose information? It's God's information. It's my creator's information that I want it to pass through me, right? That I'm open and I'm transmitting it. Or it's an electric certain, it's a circuit which acts as a path for a signal, right? So it's like it's something more powerful that I can't see and it flows through me and out. So I want to be that channel, I want to be a passage for God's love to flow into the world, right? That just sounds so great. I have to tell you this morning, I have a really good example. My nightly inventory, because it is part of this practice, right? My nightly inventory, I was pissed off at my brother. And I got into some drama. For a minute, I got there. I'm imperfect. I'm gonna, here's my humility, right? I gossip. I went right, I got involved at something with my sister. I called my sister up. I got my ad, we took allies, we like did this thing together against one of my brothers. And woke up in the morning and I was like, holy smokes, yep, I got amends to make, and I prayed. And when I sat in my prayer and meditation time, what I heard was, I'm hurt. That's the truth here. I feel hurt by my brother for something. And that's why I was quick to see his wrongs. And rather than worry about fair and unfair and being hurt by him, I really just want to be a channel for God's love. And I know the answer is to let go of anger towards my brother. This is one of my brothers, is to love him, is just to love him. I want to be that channel of that love. And I did call my sister first thing this morning. I made an amend for gossiping about my brother with her. I didn't call my brother, That's not what we do when we gossip about someone. I called my sister because she got to hear the gossip, and for that I'm sorry, right? Because, and I usually say to people, I value our time together. I value having a loving relationship with you, and I polluted it with negativity by talking about someone else, and I don't want to do that with you. I want to value our time much more than that. And then I really could feel like a channel for love. And I know the next right action, I am gonna call my brother tomorrow just to say hi, right? I'm not gonna hold on to that grudge, because I want to be a channel, right? And when I feel that way, I'm not filled with anger, right? And I get to feel peace today. I get to feel good and useful today, you know? So next it says, we want to experience some of this for ourselves, right? I want to feel some of this for myself. We should desire the same thing that we want to be a channel for others. We should also long for forgiveness, for harmony, for truth, for faith, for hope, for light and joy. I want to be a channel, but I also want to be a recipient of those things. And how then are we going to experience those treasures? And it says here in the prayer, by self-forgetting, by actually forgetting myself, I get the gifts that I want for myself. I know it makes no sense. There's so many opposites in this program, but it's when I forget me that I receive, right? By self-forgetting, which is to give comfort rather than to receive it, to understand rather than to be understood. It's better to forgive than to be forgiven. So we experience all these gifts when we're more concerned with giving them away to others, right? And we actually are promised that we get to have these infinitely for a lifetime if we mine them and give the entire load away. We give it all over. We're told that in the family afterward. Meditation allows us to live more closely aligned with God's will for us. We're encouraged to explore this and see it as this. And I love on page 101, it says, meditation is something which can always be further developed. It has no boundaries, either width or height. Aided by such instruction and example as we can find it, essentially an individual adventure. Something which each one of us works out in his own way, but its object is always the same: to improve our conscious contact with God, with his grace, wisdom, and love. So I may have tight parameters around what I'm allowed to eat, but here I'm encouraged to taste and try out and sample new things, right? We're supposed to like, try out a new meditation prayer practice. We're supposed to be really open-minded to all of these things, and we're cautioned to not have contempt prior to investigation. It says that in the spiritual experience. I should never have the attitude that anything is beneath my consideration, so long, of course, so long as it's not hurtful, so long as it's not against what we believe God would have us be and do. The next part talks about prayer, page 102, the third component of step 11. It says here, prayer is raising of the heart and mind to God. And in this sense, it includes meditation. How we go about it and how does it fit in with meditation prayer is commonly understood as a petition to God. Having opened our channel, right? Our channels opened as best we can. We try to ask for those right things of which we and others are in the greatest need. And we think that the whole range of our needs is well defined by that part of step 11, which says knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So what am I asking for? I'm asking for knowledge and strength. Really just two things. Knowledge and strength. And in the morning, trying to keep an eye on the time, we think of the hours to come. Perhaps we think of our day's work and the chances it may afford us to be useful and helpful, or of some special problem that it may bring. So I think I'm gonna stop at this point because I don't wanna shortchange prayer. I think it would be a big mistake to shortchange prayer. There's a lot of good stuff in that.